Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Oh, what a week. This is Shane Van Hurt, by the way, Brian Myers, and...
How you doing this morning, buddy?
Oh, not enough coffee, evidently. Yeah, that's an inside joke. If we were live, you'd understand what we were talking about, but...
There are times when it's good that we're not.
Yes, yes. This week has been not a very productive one. I had the flu earlier in the week. And
that's not good.
No. Yeah, it's nothing like waking up with fever. It's just, you know, bunch of giggles and grins. And then I had to work. I had a lot of writing to do from the weekend. Yeah. So, it was rough.
Well, I've had an interesting week, too, but it's been completely different. This mild weather that we had earlier in the week was really, really nice. Mm-hmm. But it literally turned... I live out in the country.
Sure, yeah.
It literally turned our driveway into a swamp.
Oh, nice.
It was so bad. I kid you not. My brother-in-law came out there. He was cutting some wood out in the timber. He comes out there in his van. He gets stuck in my driveway twice in the mud. I had to pull him out twice with my Jeep.
Man.
I mean, it is really, really ugly. So it's like, okay, it finally, the temperature's dropped and it's frozen. Yeah. That's actually a good thing.
Right.
Get in and out of there now.
Holy cow. Yeah, you need like four-wheel drive just to get out of your driveway.
That's not good.
Yeah.
Well, this morning on our VIP line, we've got a gentleman by the name of Dean Lemke. Dean is Director of Nutrient Management and Environmental Stewardship with the Agribusiness Association of Iowa. Prior to that, Dean had, I don't know how many years, a lot of years, maybe 30 years or so, maybe more, with the Department of Agriculture here with the state of Iowa. And Dean's going to talk to us about some things relative to farming, you might say, and some of the issues that come up with regard to runoff and nitrates and all the rest of it. But anyway, good morning, Dean.
Good morning.
Yeah, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Good to have you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Yeah, Dean, as you know, recently, I guess it was maybe the second week of January, I could be wrong about that, but there was a lawsuit that was filed, or at least an announcement that a lawsuit would be filed by Des Moines Water Works in connection with three counties in roughly northwest Iowa, in regard to nitrate levels in the Des Moines and Raccoon River and rivers. And, you know, we don't really quite understand what's going on here because, you know, we don't know all the issues involved. What seems to come out of the headlines are essentially things like Big Agra is polluting our drinking water. I mean, that's kind of what you hear. With respect to, you know, the news headlines or things that you see on television. And I'm sure there's more to it than that. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask right off the bat is what are nitrates? Where do they come from? How does all that fit into the question of drinking water?
Sure, that's a great question. And certainly, I want to make the note that my comments today are mine and not my employer's. But, you know, at the outset, I want to make the point that certainly all Iowans want clean water. And I've given 41 years, now 43 years of my career toward that. But especially Iowa farmers do as well. They're people who work outside. They love the outdoors. It's really important to them as well. And sustainable food production as well, also. There are many actions across the state to reduce nutrients to water. Farmers don't want to lose nutrients. I was at a meeting just last week where a farmer about this issue was making the point that he didn't want to lose 1 pound of nutrients from his fields to water because Not only is that an environmental concern, it's an economic loss, and farmers across the state today are scrambling to even break even economically given the price structures. I will say that, you know, Iowa's water is cleaner than it ever has been in my 43-year career. That's not the issue. Overall, that's clearly the case. What's happened, though, is society's goals are changing. And that's overall. Nitrate is an issue that's harder to deal with than some of the other contaminants, but overall we've made a lot of progress. So all of us want clean water, all Iowans do, but the issue is what's the goal and how to achieve it. You asked, Brian, about the role of nitrogen in food production. It's used globally, and, you know, we've got estimates that by year 2050 there will be 9 billion people on the earth, and to feed those people requires globally a 1.7% increase per year in food production across the globe. Nitrogen is critical to that. Even for today's population worldwide, without the use of nitrogen to accelerate food production, only one out of two people alive on the earth today would be alive. And so the two of you in the studio today, you'd have to decide which one of the two of you would have starved to death. It's that big of an issue. So
okay.
I have to confess, it would be me because it's quite obvious if you were to look at me that I already struggle with that. So.
Well, I thought we could at least draw straws or flip a coin or something.
No, I'll just say it's me.
Well, that'd be up to you guys, but the point is that even amongst today's population, nitrogen is critical. The invention of making inorganic nitrogen occurred in the early 20th century by Fritz Haber, Carl Bosch, and they actually won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry in 1919 for that modern-day invention, which has played a major role in preserving life here on God's created earth. And when we're talking here about food, it's a basic element of human life. This is not talking about making the next cell phone or the next a computer game system that we can choose to use. We're talking about food that preserves life that God creates. Mm-hmm. And obviously, all of us here know that feeding people is clearly an important part of God's economy. Matthew 25 directives about feeding the hungry, clothing those who need that, ministering to those who are sick and have needs. In that, Iowa's in the heartland of major food production region of the United States. Iowa produces more corn, pork, and soybeans than any other state in the nation, as well as eggs. We produce more grain annually than the entire nation of Canada. Mm-hmm. If you plot Iowa to scale against the nation of Canada, it's very, very small, but we produce more grain annually than the nation of Canada. We produce more soybeans nationally here than the nation of China. If Iowa were a country, we'd be the third largest corn-producing country in the world. And so one of the reasons we have environmental issues here is because we are so intensely involved in food production and corn and soybean products that are critical to our diets, although many people don't know that, why that is. It's the principal food stock for animal proteins that we use. And so we play a major role here, and that's part of the reason we have those environmental issues.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we're talking with Dean Lemke. He's the Director of Nutrient Management and Environmental Stewardship at the Agribusiness Association of Iowa. Why is there nitrate in the water? I mean, how's it getting in there, and what could be done to solve the problem?
Yeah, the critical question. You know, we're in the heart of what is called a mollisol soil region, and there's only four of those regions on the earth. The dark black soils we have here in Iowa and the surrounding states are mollisol soils. They're very, very rich soils. Interestingly enough, one other of the four mollisol soil regions is in the Ukraine, which is currently subject to the political unrest there. Mm-hmm. These are nutrient-rich soils. That's why we grow things here. But when the problem is when the excess rains come, these landscapes leak. If you look at at this issue from a mass balance standpoint. You look at the amount of nitrogen in the grain, the food that's removed from the landscape, the grain that's harvested, and a corn-soybean rotation at typical trend line yields, we have more nitrogen in that grain than what farmers add back as nutrients in the form of fertilizer. We're actually a net loss statewide on a per-acre basis. And for those of your listeners that are farmers and know these numbers, a 200-bushel trendline corn yield and a 50-bushel trendline soy yield in a corn-soy rotation would have 214 pounds of nitrogen in the grain that's taken from the soil, and that's beyond the legume effect of soy. So to grow corn requires nitrate in solution so that the plant can take it up. And to move that much nitrogen in the plant, given the amount of water that the plant intakes, the concentration at the root zone has to be 40 parts per million. 40 parts per million is nitrate nitrogen. To move that much nitrogen into the plant, given the amount of water that moves in with it. The drinking water standard is 10. 40 part per million in the root zone, the drinking water standard is 10. And so what happens, because this nitrate's in solution in the soil, when the rains come, some of it leaks out and causes it to move to the streams, unfortunately. Sewage treatment plants as well treat nitrogen compounds to nitrate, and they discharge it. It's the same nitrate that we're concerned with here. So part of this is just endemic to the process of producing food. We could ask the question, well, whose nitrate is it if, in fact, the nutrients added back in the process of growing food were less than what were taken out of the soil? Certainly, no doubt, some of it does leave, but, in fact, the mass balance that exists would suggest that it's not the result of excess fertilization or excess nutrient use.
So, Dean, just to clarify, so what I'm hearing you say is that we've got an issue here with respect to nitrates just because we are involved in agriculture in Iowa. In other words, it's not that people are willy-nilly dumping on too much fertilizer, or they're spreading too much manure, or they're not handling the manure properly when they spread it. Those aren't really the issues, if I understand what you're saying correctly.
Yeah, that's right, Brian. I mean, in any group of population, there's outliers to the norm. And so there may be a few places where we can make improvements, and we do need to do that where we can. But the major issue here is structural. It's one of growing food and an offshoot of growing that food under the best conditions we can provide results in some of this leakage from the landscape. Now, there are things that farmers can do to try to stem that, but they're directionally correct oftentimes than fully functional.
Well, and I think another thing that's worthwhile to note, if I understand you correctly, this isn't quote unquote big agriculture. This is a problem that the small farmer who's got maybe 100 tillable acres, he has the same issue, correct?
Absolutely. Anybody who grows corn and soybeans, which are the principal crops in Iowa, will be subject to these issues. It's endemic to the production of those. And corn is the major plant food used globally to sustain life. It's the largest single source of plant food in God's creation that is used to sustain life.
And would there be any way that we could continue to grow corn and soybeans in the state of Iowa or Illinois, for instance, and not have this problem that would have to be dealt with in some way, shape, manner, or form?
It has to be dealt with in some way, shape, or manner, or form. The question is then what are the goals and what are the most cost-effective ways to do that? That's right.
And I take it that getting the federal government involved in regulating these farms is probably not a particularly effective idea.
Well, that's a delicate way of putting that.
I'm trying to be delicate. Yeah. So the critical question becomes how do we achieve these needs and under what policy framework? Today's policy framework, and one that we have used for decades in Iowa, and one that has proven success, although it hasn't fully solved every environmental problem yet, because these are big landscapes and a big state and a lot of acres, 36 million acres in Iowa, 24 million acres of row crop, is working with the landowners, working with those who produce food, join with them and adopt practices which can help to reduce this and stem this, in essence, natural flow of nitrate that occurs from these crop-producing regions. We have in Iowa an Iowa nutrient reduction strategy. It's a technology and science-driven strategy, we believe that's the right and best approach given the nature of agriculture and the nature of these what we call non-point source discharges. But it is voluntary, and that's where discussions come up about, well, is the voluntary approach the best approach? I submit that that's not the best question. That's not the most accurate question. The better question is, well, what is the best policy approach to achieve environmental goals?
A minute left,
fastest,
Dean.
At the least cost and in a manner which doesn't, you know, damage food security. So,
right.
And we got a minute left here, Dean. Tell us about, in summary, you know, what is the fundamental question? Do we want to continue to farm in the Midwest? I mean, is that really what it boils down to? Because, it sounds as if there's really no way around this issue. If we're going to continue to be engaged in agriculture, then that's kind of where we're at.
Well, those are the kind of questions that need to be answered, and then how to achieve these environmental goals in the most cost-effective way. And certainly treatment at the drinking water source is more cost-effective than,
right,
frankly, and what we can do on these landscapes.
And you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Thank you, Dean.
Thank you.
There are times in a conflict when the emotional drain has left you with the been there, done that, got the T-shirt attitude. Your creativity has been totally zapped and you cannot think of any solution other than the ones that you've tried over and over again. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. The letter S in the Pause for Peace principle is to search for creative solutions. This will require you to explore a little outside of the box you have erected around this conflict. The best solution might be an outlier to the typical win-win or 50-50 propositions. You might benefit from additional set of eyes on the problem. So, if we can help, please feel free to call us at 515-635-5465 to set up a free consultation or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. Again, that number, 515-635-5465.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. You've heard me talk about how Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management got my business insured when no one else could. But Tim also insured my home and my family's automobiles. And just the other day, Tim told me that he had a three-week stretch where he saved three different local families $1,000 per year or more on their insurance. And he said this is not an uncommon thing. So naturally, I said, sign me up for that. Tim Hibbing is a young man who grew up in Ames, who went to Iowa State, and has been in the insurance business for nearly 10 years. He's low-key and no pressure. To get a quote, call him or even text him at 515-290-9000. That's 515-290-9000. Call or text Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management. That's 515-290-9000. Tim Hibbing of Fortress Wealth Management.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Fortress Wealth Management Insurance Services and Ames. Call Tim Hibbing at 515-290-9000 for all your insurance needs. This is Shane Vanderhart, Brian Myers, and on the line we have Kevin Jackson, who's president at the Black Sphere LLC. He is a net author, national speaker, radio talk show host, and all-around pain in the can. That's
Brian's words here, reading off my production notes to liberals. What exactly is the can, Brian?
Never mind.
Okay.
Look, he's a pain in the neck to liberals. Is that fair to say, Kevin?
Right, it's fair to say they need to wear a mouthpiece and a cup when they're around me.
Oh! Well, I'd say that's definitely a badge of honor. Anytime that you can rile up a liberal, I think is a good thing. So
that's a great segue, actually. Kevin, I got to ask, what is it like in today's environment to be a hardcore black conservative?
I think it's empowering, man. I love it. I love it. And I know that's probably not the answer you would expect, because we catch pure H-E double crooked socks, as they like to say. And I love that. I love the confrontation. I thought everybody confronted. I thought when you recognize the wrong, you said it, and people rallied behind you, you'd look behind you, and there'd be an army. And what I learned as a black conservative is when you look behind you, man, there's nobody. You are on your own.
Nobody's got your back. There's no wingman.
No, man, look, we've got nothing but a bunch of politically correct apologists. We have two types of people in America today. We have the enablers that believe that they need to help the poor little Negro man like myself. And then we have the people who've been politically correct, you know, who've been made politically correct, who believe that these people are actually helping the poor little Negro man like myself. We don't have anybody standing up saying, first of all, why would I need to help a black dude whose ancestors survived slavery and the lack of civil rights? That dude is stronger than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So that's issue number one. And then secondarily, who are you to believe that you are the person who can dish out help? You know, how patronizing and condescending and egotistical you got to be as your little bourgeois cocktail sipper to believe you can help race, you know, help the black race. Help us to do what? We got a black president. I'm going to have Oprah Winfrey come over and whoop your butt.
Yeah, well. So
where do we go with that?
I'm not sure. Kind of back to Ferguson. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you're St. Louis, or at least you live in St. Louis, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, so you have the perspective of actually living in the area, but also being a black conservative. And as all this was going on, what was kind of going through your mind when this first started?
The same thing that was going through anybody that's got two brain cells to rub together is mine, which is, this is nonsense.
Sure.
It's absolute and utter nonsense. The idea that we immediately go to this idea that this kid was a gentle giant. I think he was described as a gentle giant on his way to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even have to see the video. My immediate response was, and I said this on CNN, there are no choir boys in the hood. Now, that's not to say these aren't good kids.
Right.
They're good kids trapped in bad circumstances.
Right.
Kids in the hood learn things a lot faster than these little suburb kids. I guarantee you that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the idea that, oh, he was this, you know, the cop just rolled up on him and did something to him, that just defies reason.
Right.
But as the facts started to unveil, then it was obvious. At that point, I was like, okay, I know for a fact he's a thug. And what he did led to his own demise.
Right.
Now, if you play it all out, you could see the liberal narrative right away. You know, the first thing that happened was the enablers came out. Hey, he was a good kid, he was on his way to college. So there's the enabler side.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the apologist, the politically correct. Well, let's not jump to the conclusions and call him a thug. Maybe he didn't shoot the cop. How many times did the cop really have to shoot him that many times? Let me tell you something, guys. Listen up, white folks. If I pull a gun on you and it's got 49 bullets in the chamber and you're attacking me, I guarantee you there'll be 49 bullets in or around you.
Right, right. Well, especially when he's keeps...
That's a big clip.
It's like...
It is.
Yeah, very true. Couple thoughts.
Thanks for noticing my big black clip, but that's a whole other story.
Okay.
Forget it, guys.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Moving on. All right.
Hey, you started it.
Yeah, that's true. So looking at your comments about, you know, the enablers. Oh, he was going to go to college. You know, I work in a community corrections facility. I actually work with a lot of guys that have college degrees. So I guess that doesn't, my thought was that doesn't really mean anything. and if, you know, you look at crime that takes place on college campuses, that doesn't mean a whole lot. So.
I'm so glad you said that, because I said that and a lot of people just blew it off. I said the first thing that we do is we say he was on his way to college, the implication being that's a good life and all this. I wrote an entire piece on this, and I think I talked about it on Fox. I said they tell you he was on the way to college as if black kids in college suddenly get their Sandy. And then I told the story of I was hanging out at a campus, and I was part of a minority scholarship program deal. And the black kids in that school were telling me, yeah, man, we stole computers from these guys. And it was a thug city, you know, there. So it isn't like you go to college and you suddenly get character and all these other things. In fact, in most colleges where a lot of the black kids get relegated, you know, community college and some of these state schools and the smaller unknown schools, it's just a big party.
Right.
You know, it's just a place for you to practice the way you're going to live your life. And that's why, and I don't want to segue too much into the community college thing with Barack Obama, but when he talks about giving that away for free, I'm like, yeah, so what, kids can enter college instead of reading at the seventh grade level, they can now enter at the fifth grade reading level? You're giving away nothing. His kids won't go there. So, but you're exactly right. That was part of the narrative of education good.
So you know? I have to ask you, so you think people who go to community college end up coming away dumber?
No. Okay, so I don't care whether a person goes to vocational school or whatever. I'm not demeaning anybody's education. I think education is what you make it, okay? But for Barack Obama, right now, the average freshman entering college reads at the seventh grade level. That came from some report just recently.
Right.
So he wants to give away two more years of this stellar education, is my point. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it's completely BS.
Right.
Because what he's doing is he's saying, you know, college ought to be free for everybody. But his kids aren't going there. He will never have a conversation with Malia and Sasha about going to community college. He will never, neither will any of the bureaucrats who try to push it off as like, well, maybe it's a thing we should do. Mm-hmm. It's a way to placate the peons. It's a way to placate the people that, to believe that, oh, look, he's investing in education. It's the same lie that they told you about Michael Brown. He was on his way to college. That doesn't mean anything. If you tell me he's on his way to Harvard, that might mean something. But guess what Barack Obama and those bourgeois leftists will never do? They will never give away Harvard. Did that ever come up in the conversation?
I think they should. I really think they should.
They should get, look,
yeah,
here's
please
the point,
get
guys. If they're going to give away education, give away the best education. And force these leftists to own their policies. If I had been president anywhere in the Republican leadership, I would have said, hey, I tell you what, Barack, let's not stop there. How about we give away Harvard? How about we give away Princeton? You and Michelle went there. Why don't you get them to put a program together that makes their first 2 years of their education free? And you know what you would have seen? You would have seen those leftists running like a white woman in Compton.
I think Brian had a follow-up question.
I don't even know what it was.
Okay.
Hey, first of all, buddy, we don't want to be sending any more people to Harvard and Princeton, because then they just come out highly educated leftists. They go in leftists, they come out highly educated leftists. But one of the things that disappointed me, Kevin, about the whole business down in Ferguson was that, you know, there was an awful lot of stuff, and I'm sure you saw it on television as well, where people were saying, hey, let's wait and see the evidence. Let's see what the grand jury has to say. And there were multiple people that said it doesn't matter. It was as if the whole matter had already been judged and guilt had been found. Nobody seemed to care about the evidence. And let me ask you this. Is that because there's been... And I want you to be just as fair as you can be here. Is that because there had been generations of really, really bad treatment of black folks in that community by the police department?
So I wrote a book called Race Pimping, the Multi-Trillion-Dollar Business of Liberalism. And I answer that question, but I'll answer it. I'll give you guys a freebie. Okay?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm Dutch. I need freebies.
We can afford that.
So there is some residual to that, But there's so many complexities there. So first of all, the blacks say, well, we don't trust government. Well, cops are government. So what are you saying? You don't trust? Do you trust Barack Obama? Oh, by the way, Barack Obama and Eric Holder are the two highest people in law enforcement in the land. So you have all these dichotomies of thought that you're going. Are you listening to yourselves? Is there some residual from that? Yeah, if you were 80 years old and you were out there in Ferguson, I don't think there were many 80-year-olds out there protesting. For the majority of the people who are out there protesting, anybody 40 years or younger, they have nothing except anecdotal historical crap that they've been told about, hey, they used to shoot water cannons and sick police dogs on us. They're not doing it today. When is the last time, name me the last time in your memory that you saw police with water cannons and German shepherds harassing black people or harassing anybody. So what they do, and that's how the education system mm-hmm. works, it tells you, hey, remember this. I want you to remember this moment of the civil rights movement. And every time we want to get you knuckleheads out here to do something, we're going to give you, oh, they're violating civil rights. You know what they were saying about Michael Brown in Ferguson? And I was on the ground there. I wasn't just on TV, looking on TV. They were talking about the second civil rights movement. Now, I would love for you two guys to compare Rosa Parks sitting on a bus in a silent protest to say, I can sit anywhere I want on this bus, to a thug stealing cigarillos and then attacking a cop. Explain to me how that can happen. So what they do.
Yeah, I don't think I can do that.
Yeah. So look, the short answer is there some anecdotal memory to it? Yeah, if you're 80 years old. But if you're under 40 years old and you were out protesting Ferguson in the name of civil rights, you're just an idiot that somebody like Soros rings the Pavlovian bell and you come up and go, where do I go, master?
Okay. With how many minutes do we have left, Ron? With 2 minutes, and you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we got Kevin Jackson on the line with us.
The Black Sphere himself.
The Black Sphere. Okay, 2016, breaking news, Mitt Romney announces we're not going to have Mitt Romney 3.0. Thoughts?
Romney, he sucks! Hey!
I liked Romney in terms of his ability for fiscal reform.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is a establishment Republican. I know on the right, a lot of us are tired of establishment Republicans. I can tell you firmly, Jeb Bush has no chance. He might as well be Teddy Kennedy, as far as I'm concerned. He's got no chance. I want to see somebody that really has a more conservative bent in the picture. I don't know who that's going to be. But as far as Romney leaving, mixed emotions. I heard he was for climate change. He said, yeah, it is a big deal. Anybody that says climate change is a big deal to me is a moron, because they're telling me that they think weather, that they can control the weather. So that one put a dent in it.
I like this guy. I really like this guy.
His values are good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I like Kevin. Not Romney. I like this guy
we're talking to right now.
I'm
personally kind of disappointed, because I was hoping the establishment vote was going to get chopped up for... split up for a change, because being in Iowa, I mean, we're going to have, the whole field. We're going to be flooded. I mean, we had the Iowa Freedom Summit last week. There were a lot of people there, and that's not even, there's probably going to be additional people.
That's just the beginning, yeah.
Exactly. So we'd literally trip over, I literally almost tripped over Newt Gingrich. So
who?
Newt.
No,
yeah, I don't think he...
Yeah, it's funny. I'll tell you guys a quick story.
We don't have time. We'll have to catch you.
We got
to
roll. All right, guys.
All right, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries, headed by Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. Now we come to our segment where...
Yeah, our news rundown.
Yeah.
News that hopefully you can use. Okay, right out of the gate, we've got an MSNBC reporter saying something stupid.
And which, in other news...
Yeah, we just move right on. It's like normal, right?
Right.
Okay, well, in this particular case, we had somebody say something stupid about Chris Kyle. Mm-hmm. And NBC Foreign Affairs reporter, and I'm not going to get the guy's name correctly pronounced here, but it's Ayman Moyeldin, maybe?
Moyeldin?
It could be. Anyway, he made the suggestion Thursday on Morning Joe that Chris Kyle, the late subject of the hit movie American Sniper, and credited as the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history, had, quote, get this, racist tendencies towards Iraqis and Muslims, and, quote, went on killing sprees in Iraq on assignment. And I didn't see the clip, but apparently Joe Scarborough was just dumbfounded. I mean, it's like, did this guy seriously just say this?
Yeah, well, he went on quote-unquote killing sprees. Well, is there any, does this gentleman put forth any evidence that he hit non-sanctioned targets?
Well, this whole thing has just been incredible. We were talking off the air. People are flocking to see this film.
Right.
The book, I think, is a bestseller.
Right.
And yet, every day, it's like we expect the next liberal pinhead.
Right, we do.
To come out and say something stupid or disrespectful about Chris Kyle.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as people who are listening, snipers, their sole job is to kill people, all right?
There's a strategic reason.
Strategic reason, and or sometimes it's just to provide cover for people ahead of them. Sometimes it's to take out particular targets that.
But at the end of the day, they're out there protecting their fellow troops.
Right,
it's an important part.
Right, he obviously said not only somebody who doesn't understand the role, but just doesn't understand military life at all.
But I mean, it's just incredible. But anyway, he's one of many. Okay, and we have a new AG nominee, and apparently this woman is...
Loretta Lynch. When I first saw that, I thought Loretta Lynn. I'm like, yeah. Really? Yeah. Wow, okay.
They don't look the same.
No.
But she apparently is firmly in Obama's corner with respect to immigration. She said... in questioning the other day, that the Department of Homeland Security is focusing its efforts on the removal of, quote, the most dangerous of the undocumented immigrants among us. So this is what we need to do. We just need to focus our efforts on the bad people. In other words, immigration, you know, legality or illegality is irrelevant. We just want to focus on the bad people and get rid of them.
Right. Well,
okay.
Obviously, you know, as a law enforcement priority, I can agree with that. That, you know, obviously, if you're going to deport anybody, you definitely deport the people who are breaking the law in addition to being here illegally.
Yeah, but wouldn't you want to just maybe think about keeping them out in the first place? Just a thought.
Yes.
Just saying. Yeah,
no, I don't. We're not in disagreement there, not at all. But I can, you know, on one respect, I can understand if you have limited resources, you have to prioritize too. But the border, please don't think I'm detracting from, yes, the border needs to be secure.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it sounds very much to me like she's saying, we're going to let them all in, and then we're going to sort them out and get rid of the bad guys. That's what I'm hearing.
As far as her being in Obama's corner, I suspect she's in Obama's corner on probably every single issue.
No surprise there.
AG nominee. Yeah.
Okay, EPA chief says that Aspen's climate is in for a big change. Okay, so get this.
So no more snowing, or no more skiing.
Yeah. She said that the climate at Aspen was going to be similar to that of Amarillo, Texas by 2100. And, of course, you know, says what everybody else says, which was that 2014 was the hottest year on record. And there's plenty to say about that. First of all, you do not get that if you use satellite data. You only get that from sensors, you know, on the surface.
Uh-huh.
Secondly, the hottest year on record, I mean, this is an almost undetectable difference.
Right.
I mean, it's within the margin of error. They even admitted that. Mm. But anyway, that's not what you hear. You always hear 2014 was the hottest year.
Well, I love it how they always put their projections out, you know, sometime after they're dead. So.
And here we go, though.
They're not held accountable.
Aspen's climate could be a lot like that of Amarillo, Texas by 2100. Amarillo is a great town, but it's a lousy place to ski.
Yes, that would be true.
Okay. All right. You got the next one. It's on bye-bye to bipartisanship in the Iowa Senate.
Well, first of all, there's never been bipartisanship in the Iowa Senate.
Oh, no. This is a warm fuzzy.
Senate Majority Leader Mike Gronstalling, as I like to call him.
Who?
Gronstalling.
I thought he was the de facto governor. Remember that was the...
Well, no. I mean... You know, people try to, let's only send things over to the Senate that Gronstahl will like. He likes nothing that Republicans put forth. Just admit that he likes nothing. He'll pass his own bill and everything's going to have to get sorted out in conference committee. He will never take up a House bill and run it through unchanged and unfiltered. They do their own version. That's just how he operates. Deal with it.
What
this was about, they were trying to get an amendment changed in the Senate rules that would allow bills to be brought up to the Senate floor for debate if there was a majority of the Senate that voted in favor of it, which should be the case.
Okay.
But because, you know, Gronstalling is a dictator, you know, that they and boy, he has a he has a tight hold on his caucus. They won't do it. They just, you know, anything he doesn't like or doesn't want to vote on, it's bam. Much like Harry Reid was.
It does sound very much
like
Harry
Reid. Except probably, you know, the Iowa Senate is probably a little more productive than the U.S. Senate, but with Harry Reid anyway. They're actually voting now, the U.S. Senate is.
Feature that.
They voted in favor of Keystone. Now it's up to, you know, President Obama, you could use that pen for some good and sign that bill.
Yeah. Not holding my breath.
No.
Okay, next one.
Yeah, Gort's house with 2 minutes left. Owners stopped the weddings. We hope to have them on the show here soon.
Yeah.
I want to talk to them about this.
Next week or two, maybe?
Yeah, we're going to try. I know in the midst of the lawsuit, they weren't willing to go on radio. I totally understand that. But in a December agreement, Des Moines Register reports the Odgards agreed to pay the same-sex couple a total of $5,000 to settle the civil rights complaint. The Odgards also agreed that they could not discriminate against people on the basis of sexual orientation. And that provision then has then led them to stop hosting all weddings at Gort's house. So in Grimes, which is sad.
No, and the thing, the thing that really upset me about this. Okay, first of all, they had to pony up this, you know,
$5,000.
Right.
I mean, that's bad enough. But
right.
then they had to sign an agreement,
right.
apparently.
Right.
That they could not discriminate against people on the basis of sexual orientation. That's really, really a bad precedent.
I don't think I would have said you're going to. Gosh, I don't know. I'm not in their shoes, and I don't know
right.
What advice they were getting from their lawyer. But it.
Well, you know, any good lawyer is going to say settle.
Yeah, I mean, this is certainly better.
Say.
And it's sad that they're stopping weddings, but. This is unfortunately probably the road we're headed down if we don't get some religious liberty protection.
Well, at the end of the day, no doubt they're trying to preserve their business.
Instead of saying, excuse me, we don't need necessarily additional protection. We just need people to actually not violate our rights, period. And that goes for the Iowa Civil Rights Commission. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a little bit.
There are times in a conflict when the emotional drain has left you with the been there, done that, got the t-shirt attitude. Your creativity has been totally zapped and you cannot think of any solution other than the ones that you've tried over and over again. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. The letter S in the Pause for Peace principle is to search for creative solutions. This will require you to explore a little outside of the box you have erected around this conflict. The best solution might be an outlier to the typical win-win or 50-50 propositions. You might benefit from additional set of eyes on the problem. So, if we can help, please feel free to call us at 515-635-5465 to set up a free consultation or visit our website at crosswalkcounseling.org. Again, that number, 515-635-5465.
I'm Congressman Steve King of Iowa, and I wanted to say a kind and encouraging word for Caffeinated Thoughts. Shane Vanderhart, since 2006, has been delivering consistently on his website conservative Christian constitutional viewpoint without apology, without hesitation, a clear analysis. We need his bold voice. It's a great place to go to get your news. It's a great place to go to get the analysis of the news from that perspective, a Christian constitutional conservative perspective.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable. Yet, you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
All right, this is from the AnchoragePress.com.
Oh, it's an American story?
Well, yeah, I guess you could say so.
We found something screwy in America. Wow. Well,
what's really weird is this is actually a story out of Massachusetts, even though it's being reported out of the Anchorage Press. Life's
well,
a mystery,
I guess,
okay?
Well, you can always find screwy things in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Well, here we go. 14, I'm starting to laugh already. Sorry, I got to stop this. 14 employees of a Framingham, Massachusetts pharmacy were indicted in December
for defrauding the federal government by filling bogus prescriptions. Now, here's where this gets interesting. The owner, who was in on the gig, he gave them explicit instructions to these guys, his staff, to fake the customers' names, but they must resemble real names. And they couldn't use, you know, obviously false names. Apparently, he made that clear to them. Yet.
Because we can't tip off law enforcement here. Don't want to do that.
Okay. So here's what they came up with.
And then this is the customer list of the New England Compounding Center.
Oh, okay. Here were the names, some of the names they used on the bogus prescriptions. Baby Jesus. Filet-O-Fish.
I have a story about Filet-O-Fish sandwiches, but maybe for another time.
Okay, then there was Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. Harry Potter. Cocoa Puff. Mary Lamb.
That could be real.
Yeah.
Actually, okay. I know a Lamb family, so okay. That could very much
all right,
be real.
Here we go. And apparently they used all of the Baldwin brothers'
names.
They
really like that pharmacy.
Yeah. Yep. Alec and Steven and yeah, the whole family.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, and then it gets better. We had Bud Weiser. We had Richard Coors. See, all these beer guys went there too, right?
Right.
And we had Raymond Rollingrock, and of course, Samuel Adams.
You think in Massachusetts they would know that's like out of bounds.
Okay, the indictments were part of an investigation of, and I don't understand this, okay, but the indictments came out as part of an investigation of a 2012 meningitis outbreak in which 64 people died. So had that not an investigation never taken place, none of this would have ever come to light.
Right, which is fascinating.
Well, that's
because I'm assuming this had nothing to do with the other thing, because I can't see how that would impact the other, but it's just evidently they must have been going through the New England Compounding Center records.
That had to be it.
And they're
looking down there and they're seeing, well, hey, look at this, Budweiser, you know, he got a lot of Percocet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Sam Adams. Oh, here's Filet-O-Fish.
Right.
Must be an Irish guy from the coast.
And obviously there's massive fraud that goes on with, I mean, Newt Gingrich, I remember he, you know, when he was running for president, a new who? As Kevin Jackson would say.
Yeah, new who.
I mean, that's one of the things he said, you know, the federal government could save a lot of money if they would just crack down on fraud. And this is a prime example of fraud that should have been caught years ago.
Yeah, but there's a sense here in which it's kind of fun that they didn't.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, seriously, you got to wonder what these guys were thinking. All right.
I don't think they were.
Yeah. Our quote of the day is from Daniel Webster. Whatever makes men good Christians makes them good citizens.
Amen. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll see you next week.
Take care, everybody.